Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Mesa City Council's study session for September 10th, 2015. We had on our agenda this morning, first, an Eastmark Community Facilities District Number 1 board meeting, but that meeting will be rescheduled for a later date. So we'll begin with our study session agenda. The first item on our agenda is to review the regular council meeting agenda for September the 14th. So, Council, if you could take a look at that and tell us if you have any questions or concerns with this agenda. Agenda item 3 is some liquor licenses. And then agenda item 4 is purchase contracts. Five is various resolutions, and 6 are recommendations from the Planning and Zoning Board. Mr. Richens.
Can we discuss 6B a little bit? 6B? B is in Bowie. B is in Brady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mayor and Council, this is an item that's come to our attention over the last couple of months. The previous zoning ordinance had a hierarchical component to it in terms of uses that were allowed in lower districts would be then carried forward into some of the other districts. One of those that fit that example was the banquet and conference facilities that were uses in commercial districts that were then also by reference allowed into some of the industrial districts. When we adopted the new zoning ordinance, we got rid of that pyramid and looked for specific uses that ought to go into the different districts, and we missed the conference and banquet centers. There are existing conference and banquet centers in some of our industrial districts, and those have become non-conforming by the zoning change. So this is correcting that by putting that use back into some of the industrial districts, particularly the PEP and the light industrial district.
Mayor, if I may.
Please.
Because we got to crack this door open with this, I've seen a proliferation of the banquet centers, and the struggle I have with them is you see them going to underutilized centers, so it brings activity to underutilized centers, which is a good thing. But they go in retail spaces that we set aside to produce sales tax revenue to pay for revenue for the city. That's in a commercial area. In the industrial area, and I realize it's an activity that's been going on, but should we not reconsider whether or not we're going to allow these to proliferate also in areas where we expect employment to come in? And if they occupy the spaces where we expect employment to come in and not produce a lot of revenue or jobs for the city, then is that a struggle too? So I don't know. I just wanted to ask the question because I'm not sure. Maybe, and I know that there's some now, and they fall into a non-conforming, and that's probably fine to keep that in place because as I read the memo, it was perfectly clear that it was legal to continue as the way that they are. But, you know, should we not consider the proliferation of some of these, both in our commercial and in our industrial districts? I don't think we can unwind the commercial ones at this point. But, you know, certainly we want to set aside these industrial districts for places that employ our citizens. And you know, I know these halls also do, but they don't generate a lot of revenue for the city either. So just kind of throwing that out there. I don't know where I fall on that, but maybe we should slow down a little bit and look at this a little bit harder and consider the opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you. Good question. Any other questions or comments? Or John, any? We're talking about event centers, sure. Banquet halls.
Yes, Mayor, that is the case. And so I guess the question is how you would want to proceed with that further evaluation. We can have Mr. Sheffield here at the either the study session next Monday for further discussion before you move forward with it. Do you want to pull it and have some other discussion outside of council meetings to decide where to go with it?
Mayor, John, there's not a pending item right now waiting for this. It's just a cleanup item.
We do have a potential user for one site, but it would be a new facility. And in addition to that, because of the nonconformity, the existing sites cannot expand or add onto their existing facilities without rezoning, which means you would have a case come before you to rezone an industrial site to a commercial zoning district. In particular, the facility that's in the Commons, I forget what its name, but they're particularly looking at expansion.
Yeah, there is a decent example of it up by Falcon Field. I mean, they have a center up there that's quite lovely, you know, but what I'm worried about is where you have these, you know, row warehouses and somebody decides they want to do some kind of a thing in there, and it starts to, the example of by Falcon Field, what's the name of that place?
Stonebridge.
Stonebridge,
I mean, that's probably the high side of it, you know, so how do we protect against the low side of it?
Well, this isn't a by right type of request. The proposal is to recommend a special use permit, conditional use, for this particular site, and it would be reviewed by Board of Adjustment before it went in. Part of the analysis for that was to make sure that it remained compatible with the remaining sites, and that includes things like traffic analysis, parking requirements, things like that, to make sure that any detrimental impacts that might be caused by the banquet center on the industrial properties would be taken into account.
Well, maybe you could walk us through an example of when we'd say no to something like that. If the default answer is yes, you know, by allowing the zoning, what would be an example that we would say no?
Possibility would be if they were proposing a site that, say, for example, had several heavy industrial users that were in that particular area, a type of thing where traffic impacts, even on the weekend, might cause problems with the activities that are taking place in the industrial sites. Where there might be spillover effects because there are numerous people there in an area where you don't want necessarily a lot of people to be.
Okay. That may be okay.
And I think our challenge, Mayor and Council, is our industrial, I mean, when we say that word, there's all kinds, right? There's the more intense, heavy manufacturing. You have a lot of deliveries and others that are more just light manufacturing where it's almost a,
right, we have the way the recommendation is framed right now is the planned employment parks and the light industrial districts would tend to be kind of, in Mesa, they tend to be office warehouse-oriented types of activities. In addition to that, there tends to be some commercial warehouse showroom types of things, especially with the home building industry, where they might, for example, have a small office and then a showroom to show what their wares are, then a warehouse in the back where they keep the materials that they can bring out to the site once you've placed your order. What we found is that there's some of these have remained vacant for a long period of time. There's a particular site that we've got a lot of interest in right now for this particular activity at Baseline and Country Club, where it was initially built by an interior design firm, and they had a large warehouse in the back, and they paid quite a bit of attention to the architecture and the design of the front of the building. So it's a very welcoming entry feature, and then the list has this large warehouse in the back that the proponents of this are saying could be a very useful event site, but it's remained on the market vacant for about almost 2 years.
And Gordon, doesn't that, it also helps by, that's one pro for that is, sometimes when we have these kind of activities, these centers, it conflicts with neighborhoods and spilling over to other areas too. So it's,
sure.
You're right. I mean, we're trying to protect the employment, but at the same time, having banquet centers and event centers, which kind of surge and have peak periods, it's kind of nice to keep them out of the residential component.
Right. And then the other thing that we take a look at is the going back to that industrial comment that I made before, we're trying to keep these out of general industrial and heavy industrial areas, particularly because we don't think those are compatible uses at all. These quasi-retail areas that we have, what we found is that over the years, several of these kind of activities that spill over between commercial uses, industrial uses, tend to transition nicely in those particular areas. They tend to be compatible. And so that we think the use permit would basically give us a chance to review that, make sure and confirm that that activity is there before it goes forward. It's not an automatic.
And remind us who approves that special use permit.
It's the Board of Adjustment.
Board of Adjustment. Okay, so it's the legal process. Okay. I do feel a lot more comfortable that there's sufficient protections to be thoughtful about this. That's really where we needed to get.
And Mayor and Councilmember, I think, and we can watch this if we see a concern where we feel like the employment opportunities are being absorbed by this too much, maybe we would revisit this. But maybe we can
The other thing we can do is we can go back and take a look at the use in the commercial districts too, because that sounds like that's really where the concern's coming from, is that it eats into the sales tax base too.
Yeah, it's generally both. It just, the way it's agendized, I was talking about industrial uses, not commercial uses, right?
Right. But so, not, but in terms of staff
analysis. Stay focused. Jim's got me scared to death.
In terms of staff analysis, I believe it's something we can take a look at.
Yeah, you know, do you want to? Should we do that now? Should we go forward with this, or should we do some more analysis?
We have a couple of users that are anxious to have this code amendment go through. That's why we're bringing it forward now instead of waiting for, say, a larger housekeeping piece for the zoning code later.
Maybe we go back and look at a special use permit for commercial.
Yeah, we can, and maybe take a look at that and maybe bring it back at a later date. Maybe go forward with this at the time and then come back with the other code amendment or the analysis later and have that as a discussion first.
I feel a lot more comfortable with the protections. Thanks, Gordon. Thanks for thinking that through. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Council, any other questions on the agenda for the Monday, September 4th meeting? If not, moving on to our next agenda item for this meeting is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the What Works Cities program.
All right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Ian Linson. I'm Chief Staff to Mayor Giles, and I'm here this morning with Neil Curley, Management Assistant in the City Manager's Office. As you all know, recently the City of Mesa was one of just 8 cities across the country, and actually the only city in the Southwest to be selected to participate in the What Works Cities program. And so we're here this morning to give you an update on, kind of let you know what we've been doing since that selection, provide kind of a roadmap for where we hope to go moving forward, and then we'd like to get your feedback and direction. Before I really go into kind of the details, though, of the program, I kind of just wanted to give a bit more background on what Works Cities really is. And it is the newest initiative coming out of the Bloomberg Philanthropies. And that organization has committed to 3 years and $42 million for the program. And they hope at its culmination to be engaging with up to 100 cities across the country. So again, it's really cool that we get to be kind of on the vanguard of this and be one of those first cities participating in the program. So at its core, what Works Cities really is attempting to do, again, is engage with local governments and encourage them to take a look at the data that we have, at our disposal, and use that in a better way, use evidence in a better way to really drive outcomes, drive the city services that we provide every day, and really kind of make improvements in people's lives using that data. We're in a good place because Mesa kind of does this already to a certain extent. And one of the really great practical examples is through the Mesa Fire Medical Department in our community care unit. And everybody knows that story. But over the years, they use data, their call volume and call type, financial data, that sort of thing, to realize or come up with an innovative new program and a new way of delivering services that really has benefited the community. We've heard really great things about that. So, What the hope of What Works Cities is we use kind of that same model, maybe even more refined, and apply that to other city services and things that we do every day. So in order to get there, we get 2 big benefits from being a What Works Cities partner. And the first comes from actually the partners of this program. And so they will provide us with consulting services based on the focus areas that we've selected. And Neil's going to talk to those in just a bit. But based on our areas, we're going to mainly be working with Sunlight Foundation and then the Johns Hopkins Center for Government Excellence. But of course, you can see the other partners there, and we'll have connections with them as well. But they'll be able to come in and give us their expert opinion on how we should take a better look at data and better use that in what we do every day. And then the second great benefit is, as I mentioned just at the beginning, there are 7 other cities that are participating. And so we get an instant connection to a peer network of other cities who are wanting to do exactly what we are trying to do here. But each city is kind of, they've got a slightly different focus area. So instead of each of us kind of reinventing the wheel and trying to tackle these issues independently, we get to share best practices with each other, learn from each other, and, you know, just get that extra benefit from having more people involved in the program. And again, when we get to 100 cities, we get even more benefit out of that.
Great. So good morning, Mayor and Council.
So over the summer is really when we kind of kicked off this, our participation in What Works Cities. We had Results for America come out, spend a day with us, discussed how we use data and evidence today, and really in what context we use that in our operations, and identify some areas for improvement or areas we can focus on moving forward in our participation with What Works. And those two areas were performance management and open data. And so this performance management piece was, we do this today with departments, but the thought was to elevate that and look at data and evidence that shows the impact the policies and decisions we are making on the lives of citizens, and then engage them in that process. And actually helping us with this is Janet Woolham, our performance excellence team leader. So she will be leading this effort. And then also we decided on this open data component. So making that information available to the public proactively so they can consume that information, be part of developing those solutions with us. And then actually Dan Gardner and IT are really focusing on this area. But these two are, we don't see them as independent. And this is what makes Mesa unique in this process. These are really linked together. So right now what we're doing is going out, and we've identified some of the city's strategic goals that we will be taking and developing performance indicators for that will show us how we are making progress towards accomplishing those goals, and then finding the data behind those and then putting those out in the open data portal that we will be developing here in the near future. So these two initiatives or focus areas are very much linked and complement each other so that we will be able to track our progress, really inform decisions we're making today and future decisions on our progress towards accomplishing these strategic goals. But then also through the open data piece, we're sharing that with the public, engaging them in that process as well. So, and then next steps, as Ian mentioned, we're at the beginning here of our three-year journey with What Works Cities, right at the beginning. So we are currently identifying some of those performance metrics for those city strategic goals that we are going to move forward with, also engaging several stakeholders. So this is city departments, even some external agencies and organizations, and really identifying what are those key performance indicators we need to be looking at and tracking, and that will tell us how we are moving, which direction we're moving in towards achieving those strategic goals. And then once we identify those, then the open data team is looking at where is that data housed, how do we prepare that, what do we need to do in order to make those data sets available to the public. And then on the performance management side, Ian mentioned we've got the help of the Johns Hopkins Center for Government Excellence. They're really focused and engaged in that piece. And then the open data, the Sunlight Foundation is helping us with best practices, developing some policies moving forward as we progress. So that's the What Works Cities. That's where we are at the beginning of the process. We wanted to share that with Council today, give you an update on where we're headed, and see if you had any feedback for us.
So, Mayor, or Neil, why don't we share the Council the three areas that we're focusing on?
Yes, so for the performance management piece, we've identified three areas. That's prosperity of Mesa residents, reducing blight in the city, and then increasing the vibrancy of downtown. And these are to complement and kind of encapsulate the city, the mayor and council's strategic goals. And these will serve, not only allow us to track how we're doing on those two, but are really kind of the test cases for this process. That's why we narrowed it down to these three and are looking at how we can, how this process will work going forward. And the thought is, as we progress through this 3 years, we can expand that out to other strategic goals and priorities.
So, Mayor and Council, I think that each one of those kind of, I think, is somewhat apparent. So the downtown vibrancy in downtown, coming up with the measurements of that and being able to have the data that we can share with the community on that, ending blight or addressing blight, obviously that's going to fall into a lot of co-compliance type issues and how we deal with that. And prosperity would be?
We have a lot of economic development is engaged in that very heavily with jobs. Also, quality of life is a big issue.
Education would be a big one on that.
I think the nice thing about all of those is they can you can start small and you can kind of target an area to take a look at if it works, and then you could scale it citywide. So even with downtown, you could take a look at downtown, see how how we increase vibrancy downtown, and then apply that to other economic development areas within the city.
Mr. Luna,
Neil, or how are you ascertaining? Do you have a benchmark that you're trying to set? Is there strategic goals that we talked about? Is there a specific benchmark that you're trying to reach, and whether we actually meet the criteria that you're ascertaining?
Right. So that is part of it. So the goal, whatever the metric is, would be, well, so let's just take prosperity and let's say it's jobs would be the specific measure. So how do you increase jobs by 5% in the next 3 years for Mesa residents? So that would be kind of how you would frame it. And that's how you would measure your results and progress towards that.
But Mayor and Council, kind of the Bloomberg model is, at least based on the conversations we've been in, it's not just the government telling everyone what the standard is. It's also sharing that information or that data, and then really involving the community to establish, as a with the government and community, what is it they are looking for, and creating those measurements and those benchmarks going forward. So we're trying to set up the environment to engage the public and helping us to define what success means.
So when you reach the public, are you doing it via survey, and are you developing some kind of a Likert scale?
So I just say, Mayor and Councilmember Luna, that all that is still kind of in development right now, and that's a great thing about working with these partners is they get to come in and kind of show us techniques and methods to achieve those metrics or, to realize the goals. And so since we are still so early in that process, that's a lot of that is still under development. So we'll definitely be taking a look at that.
A small example of how the city's done this in the past, the council that was here have been here, when we did the IMESA process where we engaged the public in letting them kind of vote, I guess is the right word, or nominate, maybe is a better word, projects that they saw would be important for the city's quality of life. And then they got to weigh in and help kind of, and then there was a committee that kind of sorted through that and helped kind of establish what was important. I'm not saying it's the exact model, but the idea is you're kind of having this engagement with the larger public. You provide the information, the data, and then let them participate in helping define that going forward. But that's the other thing is we've got these tremendous resources that we wouldn't otherwise have the budget go pay for John Hopkins and these other groups to help be consultants and counsel us on this and give us direction.
Thank you. Other questions? I'll just personally say I'm delighted that we were selected to be participants in this program. It really is an honor just to be invited to participate, and it gives us access to tens of millions of dollars of resources and experts at some of the best institutions in the country. And I think the reason we were selected is because this is already something that we're doing as an organization, particularly in public safety. There's some great examples of police and fire scrutinizing the data and the statistics and trying to anticipate what the needs of the community are and to allocate resources in smart ways. So kudos to us for being for qualifying to be one of the eight cities that are selected to participate in this. And thank you to Bloomberg for including us and giving us access to the great resources that will help us take this to another level. So I'm really excited for the city and looking forward to getting some good results from this program. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate your report. The next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed Mesa Art Space project and on a memorandum of understanding with Art Space Projects Incorporated. Natalie, thank you. I know we've got some distinguished guests with us from Minnesota. Thank you very much. It's always good to have Art Space in Mesa. We're excited that you're here and looking forward to working with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I'm just going to get us started. My name is Natalie Lewis, and I serve you all in the City Manager's Office. And I'm joined here today with Heidi Zimmer, who is the Vice President of Property Development for Art Space. And just in a little bit, she'll introduce the rest of her team or reintroduce the rest of her team to you today. Art Space is a nonprofit developer. They have about 30 different developments across the country where they create affordable live-work space for artists. They're a very intriguing developer to the city because they're different from typical developers who come and develop and then sell the property and move on. ArtSpace stays with their properties in perpetuity. They're very mission-based in their development and what they want to do and serving artists and providing them the ability to grow and to thrive within the communities that they're in. But before we get too much into the purpose of today's discussion, I just want to remind the council of where we've been and how we've gotten here today. Because like the Wet Work Cities, and they're moving forward for the next 3 years in the journey, we've actually been on a journey for about 3 years with ArtSpace thus far. And it started about that time 3 years ago where we had a few leaders, very passionate leaders in Mesa, including Councilmember Kavanaugh, Nedco, Terry Benelli, among others, who found out about ArtSpace and said, hey, this fits downtown Mesa. And so they reached out to ArtSpace and said, come take a look at us. And they did. ArtSpace came and they took a look at us and they fell in love with downtown Mesa. They fell in love with the city leadership and the commitment that you all have in its future. The partners, the nonprofit agencies, the private partners that were willing to come to the table and assist in their success, the businesses in downtown Mesa and the promise for downtown as it moved forward. So they conducted a feasibility study to see if there was interest, if they built it, would there be interest locally to fill the apartments. And they got an outstanding result, and it was yes. So they know if they build it, they will come. And just recently with the downtown vision process, they've been following that, and they saw that there continues to be lots of excitement and synergy for downtown and its future being an art-focused and art-centered location. Wanting it to be a hotspot for artists and others. And of course, the coming of light rail. So now just feels like a really great time. They've been in the pre-development phases. They're moving forward now at this time. And so the two things that we're here today to do with you is, number one, about a year ago, we entered the city with your blessing, a memorandum of understanding. And basically what that did is through their pre-development, they selected a site at 155 South Hibbert. So it's between 1st and 2nd Avenues off of Hibbert. And they asked the city to hold that land while they went through continued negotiations and the application for low-income housing tax credits. So as they were going through that process, they made and the community made a strategic decision to move from that 2015 application to a 2016 application. So the first purpose of today's discussion is to ask the council for direction to extend that MOU one more year to give them the opportunity to continue those discussions. The second purpose, and I'll now just turn this over to Heidi Zimmer for a more interesting discussion, is just to give you an update about the project and what they've been doing and where they're headed from here. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Heidi.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. And thank you, Mayor and Council members. And I know a lot of your staff is here in the room as well. And I want to compliment your community on such an amazing staff. We've been here for 3 days and have had just one incredible meeting after another. And I know my own colleagues join me in just being really amazed at the professionalism and cooperative spirit and everybody working towards the same vision. That's really refreshing, and it makes it a great place for us to be working. I'd like to introduce my team that's here with me today. Naomi Chu, who's Director of Property Development. Shannon Jorn, who's Senior Director of our National Advancement Team. And, of course, our local team members from NEDCO, David Crummy, and Doug McCord from Architectural Resource Team, and Chris Winters, the landscape architect for the project. The presentation is really three parts. First, we wanted to just talk about impact, and I loved the previous presentation because it ties into exactly what we're going to be talking about this morning. The second part is about the goals of the project itself, and aligning with the goals of Mesa. And then the last part is to take probably the first look at the renderings and the design itself and discuss next steps. So I wrote down what they were talking about with Bloomberg Philanthropies, because it pretty much matches, maybe not word for word, but certainly the spirit of what is art space and how can art space projects help benefit a community. These bullets could easily have said increase vibrancy to the downtown. It does say help reduce blight and increase prosperity. Quality of life and making healthier livable communities is a big piece of our mission. And when we started working here 3 years ago, that was definitely one of the goals that we heard from all of you, is how can art space help us with these objectives? So as we're getting more into the details of this project, we're looking, obviously we selected a piece of land that's an underutilized piece of property that will help bring that property back on the tax rolls, boost the property values around it, foster a safer, more livable neighborhood, and really help anchor and expand the growing arts district in the downtown. What we haven't talked about as much until this point is how art spaces can help benefit the individual artists in those households. And I think we'll spend a little time this morning just talking about that piece in more detail. The live-work units allow those artists and creative people to have both an affordable space to live and work. So when we're talking about live-work spaces, that space to create their art, to write, to paint, to dance, to sing, to rehearse is within their living space. So their rent may be $700 a month, but they also then don't have to go rent a separate working studio space. And that helps with making it just more affordable. When you have a critical mass of artists all living in one space, it really helps create a community that is more the sum of its parts, and they get exposure to being open to the public on a regular basis. The buildings themselves become like living galleries, and the public is invited in. They get to see their work. They get to connect with other residents and collaborate. We've seen over and over again throughout our projects in the United States where you've got a writer and an illustrator perhaps living on the same hallway, and they, you know, learn about each other and end up collaborating on new work. So that's really fun to see. All those individual connections. And we'll talk in a minute how they engage in the community as well. But within that living facility, when you're talking about increasing prosperity, we see it over and over again with our artist residents that over time end up deriving more of their income from their art and maybe aren't working 3 or 4 part-time jobs to make ends meet. The other thing I wanted to point out is one of the big goals, of course, of your Downtown Mesa vision is to bring housing to the and marry housing and transit-oriented development. By the way, congratulations on the grand opening of your light rail stations. They are phenomenal. And frankly, the public art that is housed within those stations is some of the best I've seen in the country. So I was really, really impressed with your stations. This slide is from Mount Baker, which is in Seattle, Washington. The building in the background is our one of our latest projects. It's new construction. It is a phenomenal TOD-designed project with ground floor retail. If you ever have a chance, I know Councilmember Luna, you were able to see this in person, and we're happy to arrange for visits. But it's certainly in the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish here in Mesa. On a very different scale, this is a new construction project in downtown Minot, North Dakota, and it opened about 3 years ago now, has created a permanent home for 32 artists and their families, and has really helped transform the vibrancy and vitality of that community's main street. And this is an example of a project in Minneapolis, and we wanted to, it's called Art Space Jackson Flats, and it also is 36 units in full operation. And we wanted to spend a moment or two on this slide to talk about the demographics of who lives in our buildings, because I think there's not always an understanding. I know I go around the country and people say, oh, well, artists, well, they must be single and 24 years old and probably no income. That's really far, far from the truth. When we look at our own portfolio, the average age of our residents is 41. The average household size is 2 persons, meaning we do have a mix of families and single people in our developments. The age ranges from 18 to 85 years old. We have a huge diversity of age ranges and family sizes in our buildings. And so it's not just the artistic medium that that provides diversity, but the true demographics of our buildings are extremely diverse. And then the residents themselves also, this is some examples of just how they engage and activate the buildings. And I alluded to it before, but we intend in Mesa to have the buildings very open to the public, to have resident gallery spaces, to have public galleries, both interior and exterior. When we get to the site plan, we can talk about those courtyard spaces and the intent to make them very open, very visitable, but also functional for the residents that live there. So why Mesa? What makes sense for this project to align with your own goals and your own downtown vision? Well, the first is arts and innovation. And if you get 50 artists living together, you know something cool is going to happen. I know Mayor Giles has said a couple of times in some great meetings I've been in with him, we want to make Mesa weird. and I love that from the whole Austin keep Austin weird concept. And it is true. I mean, creative people bring in energy and innovative ideas and creativity, and you get a concentration of them in one place, and some really cool things can develop. So we're hoping to have that critical mass to help with those ideas as well. And then downtown density is a big factor. One of the other hats I wear, I'm a member of the Urban Land Institute. My background's in urban planning, and I do some consulting around the state of Minnesota and around the country. And I get asked the question all the time, how can we make our downtown more vibrant? And we want restaurants, and we want white tablecloth restaurants, and we want entertainment. And maybe we want housing, but we're not sure. We want the restaurants first. And I always say, because I've seen it over and over and over again in the country, build the housing, and the rest will follow. The housing, in this catch-22 of, you know, how do you get people actively engaged in your downtown, get them to move there first, and all of the rest of it will fall into place. And ArtSpace has our own examples in many downtowns of all ranges and sizes across the country of that strategy. Build it and they will come. A project in a neighborhood in Washington, D.C. that was really a rough neighborhood at one point. We now have 42 homes for artists and their families, and it's surrounded now by 800 luxury condominiums and other market rate housing developments, fabulous restaurants that otherwise used to only be in Georgetown and those neighborhoods in D.C., and now they're in this neighborhood. And you can just see example after example of investing in projects like this one we're talking about today will help cause that ripple effect that you're looking for. And then, of course, tying into the light rail and doing what you can to make sure that riders of all household demographics are participating and actively using public transportation. It helps all of us increase just livability and healthy communities. We have 2 light rail lines in the Twin Cities now, and have gone through some of the same challenges of trying to, you know, increase ridership and make sure that everyone's using it and everyone feels welcome and part of it. And so a big piece of that is accessibility and getting people living close to your transit-oriented developments. And then, of course, arts and entertainment and events. So I think some of you may be in some of these pictures I'm hearing. But these are examples from the Arts Entrepreneurship Program, and we're in continued discussions with Mesa Arts Center and all of your staff here on just making sure that this project is connected to all those initiatives and is active, vital space. And this is the rendering. But before we get into the design, I can pause and see if there's any questions about anything I've said thus far, or we can just keep going and save it all for the end. Okay, keep rolling. Okay. All right.
Big reveal. Don't stop now. Go ahead.
All right. Well, ta-da! Here's the big reveal. I forgot that was the next slide, or I would have been more grand about it. I apologize. But here is the front rendering. This is a view facing Hibbert Street. You can see there's a view corridor through the courtyard, and the first floor of the building has a ton of glass and a lot of transparency, so that it is a very inviting space. When you get inside the development, there's all these cool, incredible balconies and bridgeways and nooks and crannies, so that there's different kinds of space. You can sit there and have a picnic. You can exercise. You can have a yoga class. You could have a presentation of a film on a cool evening. You can have spoken word. You can have music. You'll see on the site plan, which hopefully you have detail of. It's too small to view on this screen. But there are a series of intentional outdoor living room type spaces. There's an outdoor maker space similar to what you see over at the MAC. There's a space for outdoor gallery. There's space for performance. There's space for recreation with playground space. And just outdoor enjoyment. So the project itself is 50 units. It's a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. The buildings, there's no pointer, is there? The buildings on Hibbert are 2-story units, and then the buildings on the rear side of the property are single-level living, big loft type open spaces with the high ceilings and the large windows. And if you've looked at other projects in our portfolio, they'll be similarly designed to those. But I do have, obviously, our architectural team here today if you have specific questions about the design, and we can ask Doug to join us as well. And I think the last slide is the MOU. And I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that, Natalie.
Yeah, and I think at this point, I mean, as I mentioned to council at the front, we just need to get your direction as to whether or not to extend this MOU. And this just allows us to continue having that land set aside while we are in this exclusive negotiation period with ArtSpace. So that's just one thing that we absolutely need the council's direction on today. And then just to open it up to questions that you have, we have the entire ArtSpace team here. We have lots of staff here. So any questions that you might have about this project now is a great opportunity to ask.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cavanaugh.
Just a comment about the design. It's very interesting because it kind of follows the design that those of us who are on the design committee for the Art Center did, to create kind of a sense of excitement and mystery, and around every corner something different. And I really like the variety of space that you've created, because I think it'll be a kaleidoscope of light and color and sound, and again, a big reveal around every corner in the little places. Although I like the exercise one called Release the Hounds. That's pretty good. Pretty good title for it. But it's I've been to some of your spaces, as you know, around the country, and this is really, I think it's building on the success and the ideas that you've tested over time. So I certainly support extending the MOU.
Great.
Thank you. Mr. Glover.
Just a quick question. I know for other low-income tax credit projects that we are doing that are coming to Mesa, we're asking if they're willing to have a veterans component. Councilmember Thompson and myself are heading the Ending Homeless Veterans Initiative here in Mesa, Housing Mesa's Heroes. Would you be willing to entertain that type of component in your project?
Absolutely. Councilmember Glover, this question came up yesterday, and one of our colleagues who is not here, Rachel Robinson, has extensive experience with working with affordable housing and veterans housing, and she's going to be working on this project as well. And I know we all would welcome the opportunity to figure out a way to incorporate those types of units for veterans in this project. Absolutely.
Yes, Mr. Luna.
Heidi, I'm glad that you're feeling better today.
Thank you.
I know you were under the weather yeah. when I saw you. You know, I'm much an advocate of symbiotic relationships, and maybe you can describe the symbiotic relationship that you could potentially have with the Mesa Public Schools in terms of artists and residents and those kind of mm-hmm. programs.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Councilmember Luna. We had a great meeting the other day to talk about that, and as part of the commercial space, or really the non-residential space of this project, we are hoping, we have one designed already. We're looking at if we can incorporate two artisan residency spaces, which are not subject to any of the tax credit regulations, and could be something that we could partner with Mesa Public Schools or through the MAC directly to have an artisan residency program for those teaching artists to come in and continue to work with the schools. We also have been brainstorming with Lincoln Center Education Program that I know is working here extensively in Mesa, but ArtSpace has a relationship with them in New York City, the idea of training our residents through their program so that it can be a much more affordable way and long-term stable way to have our own residents participating in the schools in those teaching programs. We've done that very informally throughout the United States with our one of the many activities and way that our residents engage is to provide after-school art programs in our buildings and use those community spaces for after-school programs. But we'd love to evolve that even further here in partnership with you and taking those resident artists directly into the schools.
Thank you. Mr. Kavanaugh.
Benedictine University, which would be right across the street here, has a very strong arts program. Would either students or faculty from Benedictine, would they be eligible to live in a project like this, or would the tax credit regulations interfere with because of student status?
Yes, the student housing piece and low-income housing tax credits don't work very well together. If you are a full-time student, and this is federal law, not ArtSpace law, if you're a full-time student, you are not eligible to live in a project financed with low-income housing tax credits. That doesn't apply to faculty, though. It doesn't apply to part-time students. So, and if it's a roommate situation and one's a student and one isn't, there's some, that's kind of beyond my scope of knowledge with our compliance people and our asset management department, but there is a way, but it cannot be for full-time student housing.
Mr. Luna.
Heidi, perhaps you might want to talk about how you screen the applicants that are going to be living in the art space.
Oh, sure. Yeah, speaking of our asset managers, that's a big job that they have. And we have after 30 years of doing this, we really have perfected the process. And it's a really great process that is fair for everybody. First, everyone that applies has to go through a regular background check, you know, employment verification, income, criminal history, anything like you would for any other rental situation. But then once they're through that process and if they meet all the income qualifications and have self-selected as an artist, they then move on to our artist selection committee. And that committee is made up of ArtSpace staff and local Mesa artists. And it's a panel that asks a series of questions, the same questions to every applicant. And the first piece of it deals with their commitment and passion to their art. They don't necessarily need to derive their income from their art, but they do have to have a body of work and something that they can show us and demonstrate that they are working actively in that field. And I think we've talked about this before, but the definition of an artist is very broad. And in those interviews, I'm always always shocked at how many more things I add, you know, to my list. Hat makers and canoe makers and model train makers and a lot of people working in the graphic design field. And with the quickly shifting changes in technology, there's a lot of designers in that industry as well. And so those are always really fun interviews. But then we also ask them, really the art form is only one-third of the questions. Two-thirds of it is about their commitment to living in this type of community and their commitment to becoming a part of the greater Mesa community and giving back. So those darn iPhones, they click a button and crazy things happen. It happened to me once in church. when I was trying to turn off my phone. Because it's a unique place to live, and it's not for everybody. And we have exhibition and events committees, and so if we have potluck dinners in our buildings, and you know, a lot of they're very active spaces, and they're a little bit noisier and messier than living in other types of spaces. And so you have to really want to be part of that community, and it's very much feels like true home. And with our average stay of 7 years, these residents, they build community gardens and they figure out ways to make it more their home. We allow them to paint everything. You know, in a typical rental project, you can't, you know, can't put a nail in the wall and you can't put any color on the wall. And ours get, you know, all messed up. People sometimes take the doors off the bathrooms and use them as tables, and you know, and they do all kinds of creative things. And so we're looking for people who are wanting to be part of that type of community, wanting to look around downtown Mesa and say, hey, if five of us got together to do this project, we could you know, fix a blight issue in this and do a pop-up shop or something like that to help with any kind of vacant spaces. So those are the kinds of questions we're asking, and we're looking for that type of energy in those interviews.
Thank you. I have a question maybe for the architect, but number one, let me just say, personally, and I think you can sense as a council and as an organization, the city of Mesa is 110%, you know, behind art space. I think the city of Mesa, downtown Mesa, art space, we're made for each other. The more I learn about art space, the more I look at our needs and our assets and our things we want to develop in downtown Mesa. I can't imagine a better fit between organizations. So I hope you fully appreciate how much we appreciate you and how excited we are for you to come to Mesa and how committed we are to making this happen.
Thank you.
And one of the critiques that I think people have often, and we're also excited about, that you have a history of bringing beautiful buildings to communities and taking either through adaptive reuse or new construction, really providing a beautiful amenity just in terms of the architecture. And certainly, when you look at the details of your landscape plan and all of the features, it's just very exciting, all the things that are built into this community. And I like the one concern that I think someone had offered once is this kind of monolith on Serine. Yep. That it seems like a big wall. Yep. And I see now with the new rendering, we have actually, you know, it's more welcoming than mm-hmm. I think it had initially been depicted in the first rendering. But can you mentioned there's a lot of I see obviously now there's the space that you can get into the interior of the project through mm-hmm. through Serine, which is great.
Hibbert.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Hibbert. And the first floor is those are all glass walls on the main floor, and then can you describe that for us a little more?
Yes. The first floor is all the non-residential space. So it's going to be a combination of community space, gallery space, and commercial space. And so there's a lot of glass and openness. I think, if I'm right, Doug, do these glass walls, are they intended to slide and have some open?
There we go. Yeah, so if we start over here. Good morning, Mayor, Doug. Council.
Good morning.
Sit in the chair.
You've drawn a beautiful building. We're just anxious to know more about it.
Absolutely. And we're really honored to be part of this project and really excited of the catalyst it can be for Mesa.
If we look here, starting on the left, if I can get the little pointer back, this is a space that is reserved to be a retail commercial space. It could be an office for an organization, a nonprofit who's committed to the arts. And the screens that you see here, these are conceptualized right now as rolling screens because the building is facing west, and we want as much glass as we can on the first floor, but we want to be able to control that as well when need be. So that's what these perforated screens are intended to be. The next space over is the leasing office, the property management office, or the engagement with the residents. And then the opening, which is going to be some sort of art installation. We're leaving spaces blank on the property so that we can engage local artists, hopefully during the construction, to sort of populate this building with interesting spaces and things. So you can see there in the background where the there's a wall that sort of starts to form a barrier, not a barrier, but if I go to the site plan real quick, that wall that you see with the welcome sign is this wall right here. And so this is an interior court that the public is welcomed through with a sculpture garden, the makerspace that Heidi mentioned. On top of that makerspace is actually a deck level that would be a community space as well. And then when there are big events, art openings and things, the community would be more than welcome to come and tour the entire space. And even along the sides, we're imagining the garage spaces to be galleries and small studios as well, or could be. So then as we go south along the facade, and this is imagined to be, it's very wide. Chris Winters, we've been working with Chris and the planning department to have a very wide public space in front of the building that's as good for seating, good for benches, good for, you know, dog bowls and watering dogs and bicyclists and the like. On the south edge of the building, this entire side is gallery performance space. And so it's all open. It has glass on not only on the Hibbert side, but also on the interior courtyard side looking through to the sculpture garden.
Great. Thank you. And I know it's still in design as to whether you might have one or two resident artist spaces. To me, two would be great because we have the MAC and we have so many teaching positions available there. I think that would be great to have a visiting professor type arrangement, and it would be great to do the same thing with Mesa Public Schools and other arts organizations in town. So that's an exciting component to me, and I think two would be better than one, yeah. Personally.
I'm sure we can make it happen, yeah. So... we just have to find the space.
Right.
That's what these guys are for.
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
And then maybe the last thing I would offer, is just so people at home who might not be as familiar with this project as we are, part of the reason we want it to be welcoming from the streetscape is I know part of the obligation of the residents there is to open up their spaces for the public to come in and see their art and to walk in, to be welcome into this community to experience the art. So... can you talk about that just a little bit, perhaps?
Sure. We always have to, and that's definitely one of the goals. We have to always find a balance between, they are private residences, and so they need to have the same sense of safety and security that anybody does living in any residence. But we do want to find that balance that it's very welcoming and inviting. And the way that Doug was showing it on the site plan here, really it is that I can use the this piece is really intended to be that more public, always available, you know, 7 days a week, transferable by the public, engaging and welcoming into all of these types of spaces, just as the MAC is that open, welcome type space. And then this piece is the more private residential side. That said, if we start doing like a First Fridays or a Third Thursdays or those kinds of things, then this entire space, including all this courtyard space and all of these units in these buildings, will be open to the public on a regular basis.
Great. Well,
So are we looking for a motion?
We are. We need this as an action item. We need to take a vote.
So I'll make a motion to go ahead and extend the MOU with RSpace.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. That was an enthusiastic yes. So we look forward to working with you.
All right.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is information regarding job order contracting projects. Council, any questions regarding those projects? Seeing none, the next item is acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Entertain a motion. Moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Passes. Next item is hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Mr. Luna.
Yes, I'm very pleased to announce that we opened Desert Arroyo yesterday over on Ellsworth and McKellips. It's a botanical, it has a botanical watch walkway. It has free Wi-Fi for students that want to learn more about the desert life and desert animals. So please come and visit. It's a beautiful park, and I want to thank city staff. Mark, back there, wave your hand. And all City Mesa employees that made that park very successful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed that. I had a conflict, so I'm excited to go and learn more about it and see it. I've heard it's great. Council, any other comments on that? If not, next item is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll see you next time at the study session and council meeting for Monday, September 14th.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn? All in favor, please say aye. Thank you. We are adjourned.